This is a People First Radio podcast.
How can someone get help when they might not even recognize they're in trouble? It's a question that's been on the mind of Ottawa comic artist Vaughn Allen. Earlier this year, Allen learned that his best friend since childhood, Dave Fooey, had died. Police had found Dave dead inside his home and estimated he had been there for 3 months. Allen says that his friend Dave had become increasingly reclusive in recent years, and since learning of his death and the uncertainty that surrounds it, Allen's been reflecting on what happened. Vaughn Allen spoke with me to remember his friend, Dave. To begin, could you just tell me a bit about your friend Dave?
Yeah, I had known Dave from the time I moved to Ottawa when I was about 8 years old. So he wasn't the very first person I met, like childhood friend, but he was certainly the longest childhood friend and the person I stayed closest to over the years. And I hadn't really ever thought about it, but what was remarkable, I think, looking back is, you know, a lot of kids have friends, but for one reason or the other, don't wind up staying in touch with them as they grow up. You transition into adulthood and people move on for one reason or the other. But Dave and I, in particular, managed to maintain both a childhood friendship and then as adults still maintained a really close friendship. And I'm honored by it because he was a very private guy. So he was the kind of guy, particularly in a group setting, if there were more than, you know, just a couple of people, he would barely say a word. He would just be very, very quiet in the back, kind of observing everything. But once you got to know him, he had a wicked sense of humor. He really, really liked authors like Terry Pratchett and Douglas Adams, found them very, very funny. Had a passion for history. He was learning about things like the American Civil War. He was doing that as an adult. He had trained and practiced to be an accountant. And in some ways, he had the personality for that. And in other ways, like his sense of humor, he was a smart ass. It didn't really fit him. But I suspect some of the stereotypes of accountants play into that too. So people are people, regardless of what their jobs are. And he really liked martial arts. So he had become a black belt in Aikido and had become a teacher as well. So he was a really well-rounded guy. And I'm not sure everybody who knew him actually fully got that about him. But he was smart and sensitive. And yeah, like I really, really miss him.
And you talked about in the piece you wrote about how you saw, even though you were still really close with Dave, maybe you saw a little bit less of him gradually since 2008 when his father died. Is that something you could speak to a little?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him quite a bit from 2008 on. It was really over the last 4 years, maybe 5 years now that it had become harder, and certainly the pandemic had made that harder. But yeah, his mom had died in 2004, and he seemed okay, seemed being the, you know, a strong word with this. And then his dad died in 2008, and it wasn't really a surprise. His dad was about 50 years old when Dave was born, so he was an older man. So he was in his around 86, 87 when he actually died. But Dave had been, his dad was blind, and his dad was one of the most capable men I had ever met. He had become an economist with the Canadian government and like the federal government, and very, very accomplished guy, and certainly never let blindness, and he had been blind since he was born, interfere or stop any of his aspirations. But he had become older, and he was living by himself in an old house, and Dave was doing what he could to help his dad. And when his dad died, it seemed to catch Dave, surprise is probably the wrong word, but off guard. And he wasn't ready for, like, he wound up inheriting, you know, there was no problem with the estate. He wound up inheriting the house that he had grown up in. But he just didn't seem to be dealing with it all right. And part of that was Dave was very shy. And part of it was that because he was so private, it was hard to get him to really open up about his feelings about this. But if I had to point to something that was where I started noticing some changes, it was probably his dad's death. And it didn't mean like we didn't have fun together after that and didn't do, you know, do things together. But certainly the loss of his father, he was very close, and the loss of his dad stung. And he never really seemed to get over that loss and figure out what he was going to do next with his life. And I mean, the big part of it was he wound up moving into his dad's house. And that house is really meant for a family. It's a big house. And, 2.2 kids, as the stereotype goes. And he lived in that house from 2008 until he died by himself. So lots of space, too much space, and he couldn't bring himself to sell it. And he wasn't really willing to talk about why. So I feel that the house became a bit of a prison for him, because I think if he could have let it go, sell it, it was in a beautiful part of Ottawa, a very valuable part of Ottawa, he would have done very well. He could have gotten a little condo or a bungalow or something like that and done other things with his life. And for whatever reason, and you know, we have to respect the reasoning behind it, he just couldn't do that. So he wound up staying in his dad's house, and his social circle increasingly got smaller. And yeah, I, you know, it's not so much that, I mean, obviously I liked his dad, so I wish his dad hadn't died, but I really wish that his dad, you know, somehow something could have been done to get Dave out of that house, and it didn't happen. And life goes that way sometimes.
This must have been something incredibly difficult to deal with, just as a close friend. How did you approach that?
Well, it was hard. I mean, in the time, like with his dad's death, I tried to offer as much support as I could. So that primarily was, I mean, emotional support, but he wasn't really keen on talking about it. So it wound up being a lot of physical support. I literally went with him to deal with the estate and then deal with the, you know, the funeral home and support him as best I could with decisions about cremation, because his dad had been dead for about a week or so. So the body wasn't in great condition. And, you know, my wife was there too, and we did what we could. Later on, when he moved into the house and we sort of became aware that he wasn't really willing to leave it all that much, that was hard, because, you know, we would obviously, we talked about him maybe making a decision to sell, and he demurred. He wouldn't really say yes or no. He just wouldn't really talk about it very much. Change the subject. So then we tried, you know, various approaches to see if we could get him to get out of the house. So we'd have him over a lot. We had a long tradition of, you know, spending holidays together and whatnot, and then just because days of just hanging out, playing games, you know, watching movies and what have you. But even that, for a while, that went pretty well, but even that became less and less frequent. And certainly over the last 5 years, getting him out of the house at all was really becoming hard. He had a couple of cats, and the cats were giving him company. And I'm still not exactly clear what happened with one of the cats. I know he died, and there's a mystery around what happened with another cat, but I have a feeling that other cat probably died as well. And then Dave was wound up being really, really alone in the house with no other creatures of any sort, you know, to keep him company. And it was hard. He had really detached. So it was, he would stop answering emails, and that had been, he had become less frequent and less conscientious about answering emails. And then it became just really hard to get him by email. And then the same thing started to happen with the phone, and he would become very difficult to reach by the phone. And then, you know, he'd leave messages, and the phone messages would eventually, the mailbox would get full, and you couldn't leave messages anymore. And a couple of times the phone was even disconnected. So after that, we'd, you know, take writing him letters, sending him postcards, sending him self-addressed stamp stuff that he could just plop in the mailbox back to us. And he did, and he had excuses for what was happening, you know, too much spam in his email, too much problems with a provider, very similar things with the phone, issues with the phone company, issues with the quality of the lines and what have you. And isolated, they may have all been plausible, but when you start to put sort of everything together, we were noticing, my wife and I were really noticing sort of a pattern of behavior. And it just became harder and harder to reach him. And it's very hard to, you can't, like, one of the conundrums with this whole situation is you can't drag him out. You can't, like, force him, put him in a hammer lock, kick my butt anyway, you know, with his martial arts background and whatnot. So, but we couldn't, you can't force him to do anything. And unlike my mom, who had struggled with schizophrenia and what have you, he outwardly presented as normal. So in other words, like, quote unquote normal. So in other words, he didn't have like an episode on the street where police were called because he was being violent or erratic or what have you. He most likely was the quiet guy, very polite, who went into a grocery store, went shopping somewhere, and said hi or thank you, you know, to a clerk, and that was it. So my assumption, and it is that, my assumption is that he did not know, or people would not have interpreted his behavior as anything other than shyness. And it meant that there was no way to make, like, an intervention to really, you know, except on a very personal kind of grassroots level that we were doing, to, you know, get the police involved, which I wouldn't have been keen on anyway, or get mental health experts involved. So we were left kind of groping for answers. And in the meantime, you know, then the pandemic happened, and that basically all hell broke loose. It became much harder to do anything because my wife is health compromised, and we had to be very, very careful. And we did not have much contact with him during the course of the pandemic. And I really do wonder how he was doing. And it may be one of those things we'll just never have a firm answer for.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm speaking with Ottawa artist Vaughn Allen. He's remembering his friend Dave, who died earlier this year and hadn't made contact with anyone in months. You mentioned at one point somewhere along the road, Dave did seek help for some mental health challenges he was going through.
Yeah, he had struggled, and he did talk about it. He was working at what was then called Indian and Northern Affairs. So he was an accountant, and he was working on residential school claims. And my understanding is that he was not prepared to deal with the abuse information that was coming out of some of those claims. He was not trained, and he was a very sensitive guy, and it hit him. It hit him very hard. And this was at about the same time, it was all a very compressed amount of time, when his dad had died. So he was dealing with the death of his dad, and he was dealing with a very bad work environment. And he did seek help to try to get some assistance, and he did it all by himself. So we only found out about it after he had done it and been on some, he apparently had seen a psychiatrist and was prescribed some antidepressant type medication. I'm not exactly sure what. And he found that they were fairly effective in dealing with the lows. But I remember how he described it, is it basically flatlined all of his emotions. So he wasn't sad, but nothing could get him happy either. He nothing excited him. There was no joy in anything. My understanding with medication like this is it takes a long time. There's a lot of trial and error. It's a difficult process to find the right mix of medications that work for you. And I don't know, and again, we'll probably never know if he was understandably impatient with it, or if he did not, or was not able to articulate to, you know, experts on what exactly was happening and why. But all I know is that he decided to walk away from that. And the good part was his ability to laugh and have fun and what have you came back. So we could watch a movie and have a good time, like a comedy or something. But it also meant that the things that haunted him were also prevalent. And I'll never probably be very privy to exactly how low he got, but having experienced some of this with my mom, I suspect pretty low. And he dealt with it by himself as best he could. And I find that very, very hard, you know, is we made every offer we could, my wife and I, to do what we could for him, but he was shy and not willing to, you know, to bring us in to, you know, into that world. I would have loved to have been an advocate for him, be able to go with him to this. And if he had been willing to, you know, ask questions on his behalf. I've done this before, particularly for my wife, where, you know, sometimes you're dealing with a medical establishment when you are at your worst. And it's nice to have somebody who, while they may be emotionally involved as well, can take a step back and not have the emotional turmoil that somebody who is directly experiencing it is often struggling to get the right words or the right feelings, or, you know, you're forgetting because it's very emotional. And he, as far as I know, he did all that stuff by himself before finally walking away from it. And I lament that. I agonize over it because I wish he could have gone further and maybe some of the answers might have been different. I don't know.
It sounds to me like you were as good a friend to Dave as could be expected of anyone.
I hope so. I mean, thank you. I hope so. Again, I mean, the frustration with this is the unknowns, is there's so many things we don't know and we'll probably never know. And it's very hard to deal with loss when we don't know the details of exactly what happened. And certainly the whys of what happened are probably something that will never come our way. So we cope as best we can.
In your piece for the Ottawa Citizen, you wrote that one of the most difficult things about mental illness is that unless one really bottoms out, there's very little aid given to people in our society. Do you have any reflections on that idea?
Yeah, well, I was alluding to it before too, because I mean, I think we have almost like a triage, and I mean, maybe somebody within the profession would differ, or, you know, would disagree with my terminology, but, you know, if somebody is in trouble and seeks help and are having episodes, and I had seen this with my mom with, you know, sort of schizophrenic episodes, sometimes in public, there can be aid given. But if you present as normal, and if you aren't institutionalized, like my mom had what are, you know, typically called, and I think the terminology has changed, but were typically called nervous breakdowns. So she'd be hospitalized for a few days, a few weeks sometimes when I was a kid. But in Dave's case, he never experienced anything like that. So again, as far as I know, so where does he go? He did what you would do, is you go to your general practitioner, your family doctor, you say you're struggling, family doctor makes a referral to a psychiatrist of some sort, you go see them, and oh, happy day, if everything, you know, clicks, you might be able to get help. But if it doesn't, and I think it's fair to say that in Dave's case, that didn't work out, where do you go? What do you do next? And especially if you aren't willing, for whatever reason, shyness or whatever, if you're not willing to talk to people who love you about it, you internalize it. And there's no like drop-in center for profound psychiatric issues. I mean, there's no community center that, you know, you can go to. There's not like the psychiatric equivalent to like an Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that, you know, and I have certain issues with some of these institutions anyway, but if you really have a crisis and you reach out, help might be given to you. Like, and if you exhibit suicidal behavior or something like that and call like a suicide helpline, you might again get hospitalized, you know, with care or what have you. But it strikes me, and I had long thought this in dealing with some of my mom's issues when she wasn't really bottoming out, but was struggling. And now I'm experiencing it again with Dave, where it feels like there's a gigantic chasm between this sort of gap in our culture, particularly in our medical system, where I don't know where people turn if they feel that the sort of the normal medical referrals have failed, but they're not in such trouble that they don't check themselves into a hospital. And I have to be very careful of terminology, because, you know, it's easy to say, well, somebody has showed a lot of courage by checking themselves in or what have you. It's like, it is, and that maybe that's true, but that would also imply that somebody like Dave was not courageous, which I think is not fair and doesn't fit the situation at all. There's no classes in high school for what do you do when you're struggling. There's no, there's no sort of educational process to bring people up to speed, particularly when you're kids. Like, we don't have a culture that mental illness is a thing that happens, like cancer, and that people sometimes, even if you are relatively healthy mentally, you may go through periods in your life, a job loss, a breakup, death in the family, whatever. And there's not a lot offered to help people help themselves with this. So what do they do? And I find it very, very frustrating that, you know, at the end of the day, at least in Dave's case, he basically chose retreat. And I don't begrudge him that decision. He made the best decision he could that fit, you know, for himself, that fit what was going on. But I just find it heartbreaking, because it didn't have to go like this, you know, as far as I know. So I wish I had better answers. I can ask questions. I don't have any answers. I mean, there needs to be, to my mind, a transformation right from being a little kid in elementary school, where, just like seeing somebody in a wheelchair, we don't view mental illness as this other thing. And you just sort of, if you experience it, you typically experience it just, you know, there's nothing to sort of help frame that for you. And there's certainly nothing in terms of family support either. So like, what if somebody, your brother, your child, what have you, is going through something like this? There's very little training for them to figure out what ways, you know, what could be best practices, what steps they could take to help out, maybe not even an intervention, but just show support. So it feels to me like a lot of people wind up groping and trying to navigate this as best they can, and some succeed and some fail, and we're left on our own. And I don't think that's a particularly healthy answer from a societal point of view for something that that pervasive in our culture and our society. And I also don't think it's very fair.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm speaking with Ottawa artist Vaughn Allen, who's reflecting on the loss of his friend Dave, who died earlier this year, after not having made contact with anyone for months. I know one of the hardest things for you about this has been the unknowns and the uncertainty. So I guess just to confirm, there's no, it's still unknown what happened to Dave ultimately.
Yeah. So what happened was, in early May, police had come to our door and told my wife and I that, he had been found dead. And they, it was frustrating because they approached us sort of not from the point of view of saying, we really have bad news. We have to break bad news to you that a dear friend has died. They approached us going, do you know a Dave Fooey? And I was like, oh no. And what had happened was because we had sent him stuff like postcards, he had kept those. And when the police had gone in, so mail had piled up, neighbors had had contacted the police because they were concerned. Police went inside, found him. And when they were going through paperwork, they found postcards from us and were able to track back and found us that way. So he had been dead, according to the police, for about 3 months. And I don't know if that will, the coroner is involved, so I don't know if that will wind up being like holding true or not. It might have been a little bit shorter. I'm not sure. They did not suspect foul play, so it was quote unquote natural causes of some sort or another. But of course, 49-year-old men don't die of natural causes. So the riddle with this, and right now we don't know, the coroner has not finished their investigation, so we don't know exactly what happened. His mother had died of Huntington's disease, and this is something I've only found out recently, after Dave had died. So if he had Huntington's, it would explain, because of there is a mental cognitive decline, a dementia issue with it, which I was not aware of, it would explain a great many things, some of his behavior over the last decade or so. But there is a chance that he did not have it and it was something else. So did he get sick? Was it something like COVID? Was it the flu? Was it, you know, something? It doesn't look like he fell or anything. One of the uncertainties that I have is I'm not exactly clear yet. I haven't been privy to exactly where he was found. But I've been in the house since, and it there was certainly nothing really out of the ordinary. There was no spot that I saw and was like, ah, okay, this is where it happened. So given that, we are sort of waiting for the coroner to, you know, adequately address, you know, as best they can, given the state of his body, what exactly happened. And in some of the conversations I've had since with medical people, like our family doctor and what have you, they've basically told us, brace yourself, you may never, never know. Because of the condition of the body, it can be very difficult to determine what happened. So I presume if there's something like an aneurysm or like a really, you know, widowmaker heart attack or something, they that might have been apparent in the coroner's, in the autopsy. But it's one of the hard things with this is there is a chance that it will be filed as some type of natural causes or an accident of indeterminate, you know, circumstances, and we'll just be left with the fact that he's dead and gone, and we won't know what happened. And honestly, that's hard. I mean, if it had been an accident and he had been hit by a car or, you know, or something, I mean, I understand that, you know, there still would be, you know, I mean, maybe blaming, you know, the driver and that type of case or what have you. But there would be a sense that, okay, that this horrible thing has happened and we move on. In this case, we know he's gone, but we don't know, and you know, exactly what happened or why, and it's really frustrating. And I mean, I suppose there is an outside chance it was some type of suicide. I don't think so. And certainly the police didn't give us any indication that it was. And as far as I know, not to any of his extended family either. But the, you know, this again, just like there's no class in high school about mental health, there's no class in high school about this is what happens when somebody you love dies. And, you know, this is the process that the police will go through, what, you know, city officials will go through, what the coroner will do. So I have some experience with this, but not a lot. And, you know, especially in the Sherlock Holmesian detective work of trying to figure out what happened, it's not like CSI. It's not like, you know, a television show where they wrap up the answers at the end of the hour. And it may be some months yet before we know, you know, if like get a coroner's report at all, let alone if we're lucky enough to get something actually conclusive. So what, in a way, it doesn't matter, because that he's dead and gone is enough. But I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't like to know. And, you know, maybe especially with something like Huntington's, or if something else was going on, you know, we could get, you know, some answers with that just for our own peace of mind. But I don't know. I mean, it's I'm trying to place that we just may never know. And, you know, and life goes on. It's one of the really tough things about this is, you know, sun still comes out, birds are still chirping, but you know, the loss is still there. And I miss the idea that if I do a, you know, a comic book signing, or you know, a book event, or just being able to hang out with him, like I miss the fun of, you know, of being able to see him and be able to share adventures and share, you know, stories and share tales of what's going on in our life. And I mean, I don't want to downplay what he was struggling with, but it, you know, putting the pandemic aside, which is hard, he was still sometimes him. So even when he was really struggling over the last couple of years, there were good days and bad days with that. And the good days were still a lot of fun. And I miss that. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't come across as selfish, but I miss him, and I miss having him in my life. And I miss the fun that we had together.
How would you like your friend Dave to be remembered?
Well, honestly, as a loving, decent guy, he was a really gentle human being, and the world needs more people like him. He, once he got to know you, and that was hard, you know, he had pretty strong walls, and it took some time. But once he got to know you, he was passionately loyal to you. And his kindness and his generosity were amazing. I mean, it's one of the things I've thought about a lot is, like, his dad was well off, and it didn't come easy for him. He worked hard for it, but his dad had done well in life. I was a welfare kid with a mom battling schizophrenia, and I was an only child. My mom and dad had split up. And, you know, to be blunt, most kids, I didn't have the right clothes. I had hand-me-downs. I had dirty clothes. I didn't eat very well. My mom went to food banks and stuff. She did as best she can. I'm not trying to throw shade on my mom or anything, but a lot of kids judge me. Dave and his father did not. And they welcomed me into their home as if I was just a normal other kid. And Dave, that was Dave right to the very end. I mean, he judged people for the way they treated others. And he was not quick to come to conclusions about people just because somebody had said something gossipy about somebody or what have you. And that decency was I wish I, when I was a kid, I had been more aware of it. I wasn't. It really only came to me later on in life as an adult, but it was amazing about him. And he was very kind to animals. He had rescued a lot of cats in his life, cats in particular, but he loved dogs. He had grown up with seeing eye dogs and what have you. And he went, when he would adopt a new cat, he would go to the, you know, typically the Humane Society. He would often go to a kill shelter where he knew cats that were not adopted were going to die. And he would pick the cat that they tried not to get him to take, an older cat, a grumpy cat, a cat that had some behavioral issues. That was the cat that Dave would adopt. And he saved their lives. Like, he did amazingly with these animals. And it's, so yeah, if I was going to sum him up, it would be that, is he was a really kind guy, a really gentle guy, and he didn't deserve what happened to him. And I mean, nobody does, but, you know, I dearly wish he could be here right now hearing me talk about
it. Vaughn, I'm so sorry for your loss, but thank you very much for being willing to talk to me and tell me about Dave.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me on and for the opportunity.
Vaughn Allen, remembering his best friend, Dave Fooey, who died earlier this year after not having made contact with anyone for months.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.